we can wrap up our little conversations and bring our meeting back to order.
Well, you can.
Looks like we run a pretty tight ship here. Thank you, everybody. Before we move on, I wanted to mention that Christine Gardenas had a family emergency. She had to leave, so I just wanted us all to be aware of that. Now, during the course of public comment, there were a number of questions, and staff indicated that they would take copious notes and then return back with some response to those. So I'm going to turn it back to Emily. And then once we're done with that, I want to get back to the committee and gain their comments. Thank you.
Great. Okay. So the first question I heard was, how did this development team get selected? So after the presentations and the online public comment period, all of those comments were taken in by the city, and we gave them to all of the development teams and the selection panelists or the evaluation panelists in their entirety. And we also had a third-party consulting firm do a synthesis. So all of that information is online on the developer selection website. The development teams were then required to do response memos to those public comments, which were also part of the consideration by the evaluation panel. And on that panel, we had representatives of the five city agencies that are going to work most closely on this project, SFPUC, the Planning Department, Office of Economic and Workforce Development, SFMTA, and the Mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development. We also had Lisa Spinelli, the CAC chair, representing this group and the development parameters. And then we had Linda DeSilva from City College representing City College. So those selection panelists watched the presentations and processed all of the comments, and then they got together and discussed the proposals, and then they each went and scored the proposals based on a number of criteria, including adherence to the development parameters that were created in this group, and also the response to community comments and ability to be responsive to the community going forward. So then those scores, those seven panelist scores, were tallied, and the cumulative score that was the highest was the Avalon Bridge team, and so that was the recommendation that was made to the SFPUC. The next one I heard was if we can get some clarity on how the new state legislation, SB 35, is going to interface with this project. And what I'd like to do is, I'm not prepared to speak to that. I don't really know the answer yet. It was just signed last week. So I think we'd like to get our colleagues at the Mayor's Office of Housing, who really specialize in this, to come back at another meeting in the near future and give a more thoughtful answer to that. The question about how the park design process will work. So the parks and open spaces in this project are going to be open to the public, but one of the opportunities that comes along with bringing on a private development partner is to have them create the parks. And so they pay to build them, and they pay to maintain them. And so they're going to be the developer of the parks, but as part of the whole design process, there'll be feedback around design, and there will also be some kind of legal mechanism to ensure that those parks remain publicly accessible. There was a question about housing for vets, and I'm gonna let the affordable housing folks on the development team answer that. Maybe, Brad, when I'm all done, I'll hand the mic over to you to respond. I'm going to, Chris's three questions about process, I'm going to kind of take them in chronological order. So She wanted to know, when will the land be declared surplus, have entitlement started, and how does environmental review under CEQA interface with this whole process? So of those three things, the first that hasn't happened yet, but will be the next to happen, is the environmental review process under CEQA. So there needs to be some refinement of what exactly is going to be studied, kind of how to describe the project and how that will be studied under CEQA. And once that is pinned down, the planning department can start doing the really kind of intensive analyses, things like a really intensive transportation study, looking at sustainability and all of the different potential impacts in a lot more detail than we've been able to so far. So that will be the environmental review. Then when that's completed, the entitlements process, which is the public approval process, can start. So that we're hoping will happen in mid-2019. And as part of that process, the project in all of its elements will go through the Public Utilities Commission, the Planning Commission, and the Board of Supervisors. And as part of the action that the SFPUC takes, there'll be the surplus land declaration. There was a question about, will increased enrollment at City College be taken into account? And our expectation is yes, that it has to be as part of all of the analysis, the environmental analysis. We expect the project to look at whatever the current enrollment is as it's gone back up as a result of Free City College. And then the last thing is more of a comment than a question. I just want to be really clear that the city has not been forging documents or making up information around the transportation analysis that's been done so far or anything else. I'm not sure exactly what was being referred to. I will tell you that the transportation consultants were hired by the city, and as the client, I think staff probably made comments and gave input as that document was moving from an early draft to a later draft, but that's the only thing that I could think may be the confusion. So I'm gonna hand it over to Brad around the vets question and anything else that you might like to respond to.
Thank you. I'm just gonna take some of these that did come up. I'll start with the veterans housing question. I think that we would think about veterans in a couple different ways. There are maybe the 1,000 veterans that are attending City College right now and are back from their tours of duty and they're reintegrating into society, and they could apply for and live in any of the housing that might be built here, depending on how much they make. If they don't make too much, they can live in the affordable housing. If they make enough, they can go live in Joe's housing. There's also another category of veterans that we and others are working on, and these are the guys that have come back and have significant challenges, traumatic brain injuries, and other things that have really forced them. They're a large population of our homeless group, and they're a subset that people are trying to work toward. We're right now, we don't have a set aside, as we talk about it in our business, for veterans housing, for that kind of formerly homeless crowd that I was describing. I think it would be a valuable and important thing for us to think about. That comes with a lot more costs. There's sort of 20 years worth of services that have to be associated with that housing, but the state has some funding for that, and we're expert at garnering that funding. But I don't want to just focus on veterans. I think there are other subsets, if you will, of people that need housing and the people that we're serving. There are people advocating for transition-aged youth. There are 18-year-old kids walking out of their foster parents' house tonight onto the street and trying to be independent adults, and they're not all equipped to do it. And again, the state has some money to help these kids reintegrate. With proximity to City College, to me, that makes a lot of sense, and you might be able to help some of those kids. stabilize their living environment, and then literally walk across the street and better themselves and find themselves integrated into society. We talked about senior housing. That's not something the city has been promoting. It's not something we promoted, but I would say that's another one of these subsets. And one thing we know as a large apartment owner, we have lots of what we call family housing. It was designed for families. It's not age restricted, and yet 15% of our family housing is occupied by seniors. So even if we didn't build dedicated senior housing, we're pretty sure we're gonna get a senior population here probably occupying the one bedroom units and some of the lower income units. That's been our experience. Teacher housing and housing for, let's just call it the workforce. We've talked about that at length. There are a lot of educational institutions nearby, not just City College, but all of the public schools and private schools. We would love to be able to capture that subset as well. So I'm going off the questions, but I just want to put the veterans housing in context. Rental versus for sale. So we did reach out right away. We know there's going to be for sale townhomes at market prices. We know Maureen's going to build some for sale flats or townhomes at below market rate prices. We're going to do as much of that as we can. It's substantially more expensive to build for sale below market than it is to build rental below market. Maybe three or four times as much. So one of the decisions we made is we want to build as much affordability as we can. We know we can get more of that out of rental. I do want to make a plug for our residents. They have long tenures in our buildings. They do care about their communities. We've surveyed them. They coach soccer. They go to church. They volunteer in their community. And they, on average, live in our buildings for 12 years. So these are not transients that don't care about the neighborhood. 2-acre contiguous park. I was going to ask our landscape architect to comment on this. And Gary, I'd be happy to do it if you'd like. But you came, you might as well introduce yourself.
Yeah, simple answer. We've tallied the open space pretty carefully. We've got 2 acres of contiguous open space in that Central Park area, and then another 2.2 acres, which is distributed throughout the site. And then, I'll just very, very quickly mention, there was a couple of comments about wind. And I just wanted to point out, if you look at this image, looking to the east, the west side of our site is stacked up pretty well with that forest that somebody mentioned. That's our placeholder, a reminder to ourselves that we do want to filter the wind there, and we have a little pavilion there to provide shelter from the wind as well. Thank you.
Okay, so committee members, we've heard the comments from the development team, we've heard comments from the community, we've asked questions for clarification. I want to give an opportunity for the committee members, starting with John here on my left, to if you have something to say with regard to this, that's why we're here.
I'll need a few minutes.
Okay. Got quite a bit here. I wanted to echo, this is loud. I wanted to echo what some people have said. You know, what we're doing here is we're not building buildings, but we're building a community. So, and it's a neighborhood. And it's not really many times in the city that it's been done like this before. And we can't have, I actually don't mind the Whole Foods building. You know, it's a block on top of, it's a floating block, I know. But if we had rows and rows of those, I think it would be too much. And I would like to see a neighborhood that looks like, at least as much as we can, it's hard to do, but just try and make each building look different and have various kinds of architecture. And I realize it's all being built at once, and it's not being built in the organic way that a city usually grows, but it would be nice if we could at least try to have different kinds of different facades on each building and make it look like an actual neighborhood. And I think Kate mentioned something about connectivity to the rest of the neighborhood. I really want to make sure that we have a way to get in and out of the project with in many ways as possible. Parking, in the parameters, we voted unanimously for 0.5 to 1 parking. And that means every two units, on average. Some of the units, the family housing, would have 1 to 1. Other parts would have 0 parking, but on average, the whole project. It's codified in our parameters, 0.5 to 1. This project allows for another 500, and I heard the number 750 also bandied around tonight. I am not entirely against that, but I want to do it in the way that we're not accommodating demand, as Joe said earlier, but actually managing the demand in a way as much as we can. And there are ways to do that. We can have bike shares coming to the neighborhood, car share, shuttles to BART, and of course we need to bring Muni into this conversation. They've been absent, but we need to improve the K line and the 43 and all the bus lines that come and go from here. I'm not totally against the City College parking if it's only used for City College. And I know we talked about shared parking, but I was under the impression, and I think I was right, that we were talking about that 0.5 to 1 parking that would be used to be shared during the daytime when residents are not around. If there's going to be extra parking for City College, and the amount of parking I would say should be less than 500, but that's up in the air, that should be exclusively for City College. And it should come in a way that it is not replicated on the campus. There should not be any, it should offset parking that's not built on campus. That leaves more resources for parking, for housing, for teachers and staff, for students, or more classrooms, any kind of resources for students. Parking is very expensive, as I'm sure the developers here know. Each parking spot costs $75,000 to $100,000. So a 500 space garage will cost cost $40 to $50 million a year. Operating costs, BART once figured out the operating cost per spot to be somewhere around $1.25 to $2.50 to $3 a spot. So we're talking about $1.5 million a year of operating costs. Yet City College only charges $30 a semester or $40 a semester for parking. Something has to happen so that we can cover the cost of this parking. And not only that, but the low cost of parking, and the City College is bound by state law to keep the price of parking low. It has to be under $50 a semester, and they charge $40. At $3 a day, parking, driving to school is a lot cheaper than taking the bus. And anybody with half a mind would say, I'd rather drive because it's faster and easier and it's cheaper. I know that there are a lot of people that really do need to drive and they will pay the price, and there should be parking for those people. But I think a lot of people are actually induced to parking, to driving to school. And it's a they're subsidized. Their parking is subsidized. And I think that those dollars should be used in a way that manages the demand in a better way. So how much should parking cost? Since the garage is not part of CCSF, it would be exempt from that state law. And I would argue that a market-based approach be used. The price should rise to the point where a certain amount of parking is available at all times of the day, and there should always be a parking spot for anyone willing to pay the price. Conversely, parking should not be so expensive that the garage sits half empty. On the other side of the equation, we of course need to make sure that the parking subsidies and direct them instead towards alternatives. Make transit for students free. Everybody gets a fast pass. Do this and a larger portion of the students will choose transit over driving. Also provide numerous bike share stations with reduced or free memberships. And I continue to argue that a free shuttle to BART and on-site childcare would be an order of magnitude cheaper than building a parking garage on campus. So that's my argument for parking, and giving it a lot of thought, and I feel strongly about it. Thanks.
Good evening, everyone. Howard Chung, CEC member representing the Ocean Avenue businesses. We didn't talk much about retail, but that's something that I'm interested in quite a bit. I think in past CAC meetings and as part of our parameters, retail was thought of as a more of a subsidiary or lesser emphasis. You know, the emphasis being housing, building as much affordable housing as we can. So at some point I want to hear about the retail plan and how the retail will integrate with the existing retail at Ocean Avenue. I know you folks have been talking about integrating this entire project with the other parts of the neighborhoods, but specifically how it will relate to Ocean Avenue businesses. When Whole Foods came in, there was a great fear of with the Ocean Avenue businesses that would suck out the demand and the small businesses would be hurt. It's happened a little bit, but you know, small businesses are able to adjust and they're able to provide products that, you know, that Whole Foods is probably just way more expensive than they're able to provide. So if some thought can be given, some discussion can be given as to how the retail component will work, I'd appreciate that. And then just real quickly, I kind of agree with John's thoughts on parking, demand parking, changing the pricing depending on the demand. I know people can get really keyed up on numbers as to what the ratio of parking is to the number of units and some flexibility on that, given how things are changing, is important. And then greater densities. The more and more I hear from people, and as long as it's done thoughtfully, carefully, greater densities don't scare me. I think we can think seriously about upping the density amounts.
Mike Larratt, on behalf of the Westward Park Association, got to get this mic right. First, just on the shared parking, I do agree that I had never contemplated that shared parking with residents and City College would work, so I would echo some of the comments already made tonight. As to the position and the comments of Westwood Park, we've made many comments over the past year that I've been, it's now been a year I've been on this CAC, and I'd like to thank Jeremy and Kenrich and Emily for meeting with me on many prior occasions, and they've listened to me. I would like to thank the senior management of the developers for meeting with me previously and indicating that they're ready to meet with my neighborhood. And I intend to take them up on that and to continue to discuss. I can tell already by the presentation tonight that many of the points we're making are being considered. And that's what development should do, is consider the views of the community. So thank you very much. Obviously, you know, there are things that we think have to be changed. We made those points at the last meeting at Lake Wilmerding. We made them in writing, and I appreciate both the city and the developers keeping an open mind on those points.
Good evening, everyone. Maurice Rivers, representing the OMI and next door Ingleside. And I just had two very brief points. And the first point is, you have to be careful with having a citywide meeting, because if you do that, then you bring other people into the argument that can change the dynamic of this whole project. And I don't think that the whole city should have an input on something that only affects this side of the city. And I think that the Westwood Park neighbors and Ingleside neighbors should have first crack at what happens over here, because they live here. So that's how I feel on that. And my second point is for the gentleman from the Housing Action Coalition who got up and talked about upping the density to 2,500 units. I would just say, really think about that, because if you put 2,500 units on this plot right here, you're gonna change the dynamic of this neighborhood. So really, really think about that.
Okay, so I'm representing City College of San Francisco. My name is Bridget Avila, and I'm on the Board of Trustees. And just to let you know, in case you're short of meetings to attend, The fourth Thursday of the month, we'll be having our Board of Trustees meeting, and we'll be discussing this. It will be on the agenda. It's a lot of fun. You should come. Anyway, I do want to say on behalf of City College, the three things that we're most concerned about is offset parking. We're going to be losing some parking, so we want to make sure that we have parking. Now, I'm not a big parking advocate, but I do recognize that we're going to need some for City College, and we're going to need that lost parking, and a garage might make more sense than having it open like it is now. Also, the Performing Arts Center is going to be a reality sooner rather than later. So we're moving forward on this, and I do want to say that even though it's going to be our construction on all of these renderings here, I see that there's a big gap between this building and the proposed Performing Arts Center. And I just don't want developers of the city to get too comfortable with that. So just pointing that out. But the Performing Arts Center will be built there, and that is our big concern, is building it sooner rather than later, as I said. And then one of the things that I've been hammering about in these 22 meetings that we've been having is faculty housing. Faculty housing is a serious issue. If you did not buy a home in the 1970s or even the 90s, you can't afford to live here. Even if we paid what the union demanded that we pay faculty, they could not afford to live here. It's extremely important, and it's an equity issue, really, that we're able to provide some housing for our faculty. And so we want 500 units for a academic community here. And if we have to increase the density a bit or rearrange things, I'm fine with that, but we really need to go forward with some kind of faculty housing. I also just want to mention that I heard some really great comments tonight, and one of them kind of caught my ear, since I live in the area also. And I live amongst all these beautiful 1920s and 1930s homes that are Spanish Revival and Art Deco and modern. And I would love to see something more fitting and actually reflecting the Pfluger building, that's the science building. So I think that would be a great idea also. And the other thing is rental versus for sale. I'm not sure how much that difference is, but I think having units that people can buy is a lot better than having just units for rent. There should be a mix, but if we can lean on the other side, I think that helps really create a community. I say that as a longtime renter, until I bought my place in 2003. And I was a renter that was part of my community, so I understand renters can be, but I think it would be nice to let my students — I teach at San Francisco State for my day job — let my students have a place to live here.
Okay, finally, Robert Gilgar, the liaison to the Balboa Park Station CAC. That's the other end of this Balboa Park Station area plan. We're all part of the plan. I have three points I want to just touch on. First of all, we're building a neighborhood here. This isn't a housing development, this is a new neighborhood. And towards that end, as we go through this process, I'm really gonna be interested in the quality of the design, as well as the quality of the materials that we're gonna see, particularly on the outside. And I walk all over the city, and I always got my little trusty camera, and I take pictures of stuff that just strikes my eye. This is nice. Some of it's affordable, some of it's top-end housing. But one thing that you notice when you look at this housing, the stuff that works, it's the quality of the exterior material. So I'm going to be bringing this up often. Secondly, I had always hoped that the City College and this had been one master plan, instead of the City College doing their master plan, we got a master plan here. But okay, we're not there. I'm a realist. And I want to echo Bridget that I'd like to see some housing set aside for City College. And we'd leave it up to City College if that's providing housing for staff, or for students. But I think that there is room to kind of blend this a little bit, accomplish a couple of purposes at the same time. Now last, if we're going to be successful out here and get people out of their cars, we can talk about building the infrastructure necessary to get the buses in and out. I would like to see MTA be more at the table here talking about how they're going to incorporate their operations. Are they going to have more bus lines? Are they going to develop a shuttle line? I mean, what can they do creatively to make this work? Particularly, if, you know, I don't know what the density we're going to be looking at ultimately, but it's going to be more than we got there right now. And we just got to get MTA at the table somehow to begin to talk about how they are going to help be part of making this successful in their operations. And again, I serve on the Balboa Park Station. How are we going to link this with that station? Sure, we have this at the end of Block and Phelan, but how are we going to get people down to the station to get downtown using BART? I walk up Ocean Avenue, Geneva every day, and it starts with taking care of the low-hanging branches and the poor lighting and the sidewalk heaves that you trip over. This is just not going to be conducive to getting people out of the cars. So those are the issues that I'm going to be looking at as we go through time, and I sure hope that we can come out at the other end of this with good responses, a good action plan that integrates this well into the community. Okay, I'll get off my soapbox and we'll return to the agenda here. We're now on item 5, general public comment. And if you have a pressing matter that you want to bring up that's not to do with the item that was agendized tonight that has to do with this project, now's the time. And as in last time, if there are a number of comments, we can please line up on your right side. And again, we'll have 2 minutes. So, okay, we have one. Okay, well, we'll just begin then. And again, if it's something you repeated already, we don't need to hear it again. We took notes. Let's try to focus on the things that are not on the agenda that have to do with this project. Thank you.
I don't think this repeat. Hi, I'm Dave Tejeda. I'm a resident of the neighborhood since the end of the last century. My issue is that when you're working through this, I think that there should be a requirement for the builders that they make it so that to prove that the transportation issue is resolved, they have an extremely high percentage of their workers would have to come here on public transportation. And it would prove that they didn't need to come here. They could say when they got the building made, oh, it already works. So by the time the building was made, they would have come here on public transportation.
Hi, Laura Clark. Just addressing some things that the CAC members brought up. I think it's important to think about maybe the impact on the community in a different way than I think some people are thinking about the impact on the local community. Local renters are extremely rent burdened, and they are struggling to stay in these communities. It is really impossible to watch the rent just go up and up and up and up and up. And the reason that people are commuting long distances to go to city colleges is because they can't afford to live nearby, and because the entire city and also this community has chronically underbuilt housing. And so when we're talking about, you know, concerns about, you know, how high the backyard is going to be on Westfield, I just think that maybe we should rethink our priorities a bit about that. I used to live in Noe Valley, and we had interconnected backyards where we could all potentially peek in on each other, and it really is not so bad. You know, every once in a while I got to see neighbors having a backyard potluck and things like that. And having backyard neighbors at 30 feet, 40 feet, 60 feet is just, it's not really that much of a burden, but being rent burdened is a real burden. Thank you.
Hi, Jennifer from Sunnyside. Two things. One is congestion is not just cars, it's walking, it's bicycles, it's public transit. All these things need to be worked before anything's going to work properly. The other thing is, when we started this, we all thought that this was going to be about 500 units, and now this proposal is for 1,100 units, and then through the grapevine I heard someone talking about it being 1,500 units, so I'm a little confused because this proposal is for 1,100 now. I know there's some flexibility, but I just want to know where it's going from here. Thanks.
Steve Martin Pinto, president of the Sunnyside Neighborhood Association. I just want to say a few things real quick. I know we're under a great deal of pressure to build a lot of housing. I get that. But let's not let the sense of urgency caused by this housing crisis force us into making rash and poor decisions. We need to really take our time in making sure this development turns out right and make sure the project is developed in a way that's respectful to the neighborhood and the residents. And I can't stress enough, you know, what people have said earlier, that we need to make these houses have a unique sense of architecture, style, and make them look just aesthetically pleasing. Also, to kind of echo what somebody said on the board here, is the SFMT absolutely needs to be involved in this as well. And the fact that they're not here is actually kind of concerning to me. Thank you.
Good evening, I'm Jonathan Randolph, again from Ingleside. I think I agree with some of the comments earlier. For example, John said that we want to have like really great looking architecture. Other people said that the development, the proposals in the past just looked for, the developer just wanted money and it was kind of an uninspired proposal. And I agree in some sense with those statements. I think this neighborhood, this new development that we're talking about should have really a great vision to it. And it should really address the things that we need to address it, that we need to address. It should be a bold statement about what we can do to address the problems that we're facing in our generation. We have a very extreme but diffuse housing shortage throughout the Bay Area, whereas the folks here, we have localized impacts that we're worried about. And that balance is something that we have to deal with, but we also have to recognize the nature of that conflict, so to speak. It's the same mechanics as environmental tragedies of the commons or any number of intractable political problems where some interest group or some localized people are much more vocal than a very large group of people who have a very extreme need. And when I hear from some people, they say, it's always been bad. It was bad 30 years ago trying to afford housing. It kind of reminds me of a frog in water, right? When your children are telling you it's so hot out here, it is so difficult to afford housing. And then people say, well, it's always been like that. I think you also have to be mindful of the way things change and how extreme it has gotten. Thank you.
Hi. So I tried to pick an example that was as clear as possible. There are other examples, but right now we're sort of processing them. This was an email to Fred Sterner, the former facility master planner, before the interviews for the facility master planner consultant. And apparently Jeremy Shaw was able to attend those sessions and other City College staff were not. They were not allowed in. So Jeremy sent these to Fred. Please provide an example of providing an innovative transportation or access solution to a client. What did you approach the problem creatively, politically, or analytically? What solutions or approach would you propose for a complex and diverse urban neighborhood such as the CCSF Ocean Avenue campus? In a political and academic climate that is very active, how would you engage CCSF campus planning and transportation as distinct from other CCSF topics? How would you address issues such as parking, access, and neighborhood planning that the surrounding communities continue to see as a challenge and have discussed for years? The facility planners are supposed to be planning the City College facility. They're not supposed to be providing solutions for a Balboa Reservoir development. And there's other things. This was my clearest example. Thank you.
So hi again, Montserrat from the Ingleside District for a long time. Just based on some of the things that I've heard, I wanted to make the comment that, I get it, we need a lot more housing. I'm not completely opposed to it. I lived in France for 8 years. Europe does high density very well, but high density usually comes with height. Now, if your buildings are tall but attractive and maybe have elements of greenery on them, face greenery I'm talking about, that may be more doable. The other thought I had was the whole small, tiny house movement, based on what someone else said, that a lot of a certain segment is always going to be lived in by seniors, solo seniors. So perhaps there should be parts set aside for mini dwellings. You'd have to look at your statistics on how many seniors end up in communities like that. And then, I'm sorry, I can't remember your name, but you were talking about the businesses. I'd have to review again how the new buildings are going to face Ocean Avenue. Are they going to be large spaces? I don't know if you even know that. But I also think in order to build a vibrant and interesting community, we need to be careful of what kinds of businesses. I think that's really, really important. I think it can set the tone of a neighborhood. Thank you.
Harry Bernstein, hope I'm not repeating what I said before. So among the concerns expressed by City College, earlier in the CAC process, the City College was asked for its feedback. It said that there should be mitigation for the loss of parking. This response apparently disturbed the city staff, which for some reason had been allowed to edit the college's response. The city staff improperly removed the word mitigation, which implies CEQA. So one of the City College's key concerns was never raised in the CAC report. That's a question for me. Number two, on the display where it says auto circulation parking, it says a shared use garage accommodates City College parking overflow during the day and residential parking in the evening. The proposed development and the construction of the Performing Arts Education Center will eliminate, I believe, some 1,500 parking places. So what about evening classes at the college? And weekend, though maybe that's not a large number. How about audiences at the Performing Arts Education Center programs? Where are they supposed to go? And three, how did the 500 units, this is like Jennifer's comment, how did the 500 units envisioned at the reservoir site for the Balboa Park Station plan grow to be more than double that number?
Okay, so you have something you want to say yet? Be quick.
I'll make it quick.
All right. With that smiling face that you say no.
It's actually getting back to Key City College former chair. I just want to say I heard some really good ideas that I didn't get a chance to say earlier. And I think it would be great to see dedicated full-time student housing as well as faculty housing in this proposal somewhere. And yeah, if that 500 spot garage gets built, it has to be market rate.
Okay. Item 6 on the agenda is close a meeting and have a discussion covering partnership updates, meeting evaluation, meeting recap, and next steps. Under partnership updates, I consider the Balboa Park Station CAC a partner in this. And the next meeting of the Balboa Park Station Citizens Advisory Committee is November 28th. And by the way, that committee is staffed by MPA.
Did you say November 28th?
November 28th.
Okay.
Okay, I just, yeah, please.
So it feels awkward that we've just been asked like 50 questions and we're not like providing responses. So I just want to acknowledge that. First of all, thanks everybody for being here at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night and being engaged. We will stick around and we can answer questions one-on-one. And then potentially in future meetings, and I talked to you guys about this, but we may want to talk about finding a format that works a little better rather than one at a time speakers to have some engagement so we can try to answer questions live and I would say be a little more productive in trying to solve this and fix it and tweak it as it needs to be tweaked. So wanted to acknowledge that rather than just sort of like listening and nodding and then everybody leaves. So and if you want to chat, we'll be around.
Okay, thanks. Just a couple of logistical things. Check in with folks about accessibility. We had a request for a closed captioner at one of our early meetings, and we've continued to have them back to help out folks who are hard of hearing. We haven't had any follow-up from anyone in a while, and so not totally clear on whether this is meeting people's needs, if there's still a need for it, if there are other accommodations that we should be thinking about. We don't want to just kind of go forward with the status quo if it's not what's working for people. So if you want to talk about that, please come talk to me afterward, and we'll figure out kind of what the most helpful way forward is. So our regular meeting time, now that we have a development partner in the room, and are getting back to the CAC meetings, it's the second Monday evening of the month at 6 p.m. And so that's the 13th of November for the next one. In terms of, I guess I just want to say, we heard the request for diversifying the meeting locations. I think that's a conversation that needs to be had with the chair and the vice chair. They're the ones who kind of advise us on when and where it's appropriate to have the meetings. But certainly from the city perspective, when we hear calls for more inclusion, we take that seriously and want to honor it. Certainly don't want the voices of people who live right in the neighborhood and care deeply about this project to be drowned out, but we listen to and accommodate calls for greater inclusion as a city. So we'll kind of get back to folks on how to do that.
Okay, that wraps it up, and I'd like to hear a motion to adjourn.
I move we adjourn.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Stay.
And thank you, everybody, for being here. I know you could have been all watching Monday Night Football or something, but this is your community. Thank you for being here.
We'll talk to folks and see if that's possible.
I was at another meeting in person. Oh, it's the one of the oversight committee meetings, mm-hmm. and the person doing that.